like a buffet. Plenty to choose from. Two of the ships were standard run-of-the-mill passenger shuttles, their hulls weathered and dented. He quickly dismissed them as unworthy of stealing. The third was the largest of the group, and appeared to be in mint condition. It was also marked with the crest of the royal family. Set smiled. There was something appealing about the idea of escaping Doan in a shuttle owned by the ruler of the planet. It definitely had a certain flair. And then he saw the fourth vessel. We have a winner! The smallest of the lot, the ship was sleek and stylish with red trim and a black hull. The perfect vehicle for a man of Set's discriminating taste. Eager to escape, the dark Jedi made his way down the staircase and across the hangar, his lightsaber clutched in his right hand. When he reached his chosen shuttle, he let out a low whistle of appreciation and reached up to stroke the smooth, dark hull.
Look, but don't touch.
A soft female voice whispered in his ear. Set snapped his hand back and whirled around, his lightsaber springing to life as he slashed at the empty air behind him. Just out of range of his attack stood Anik'Tochi in a black cloak. Her hood was thrown back to reveal the long curved horns that curled down along her neck and under her chin. Black tattoos marked her lower lip, and her small pointed teeth were bared in an eager grin. Set wasn't normally one to shy away from a fight. Not if he thought he could win. But there was something unsettling about this red-skinned opponent. It was practically impossible to sneak up on a Jedi, yet Set hadn't felt her presence until she'd spoken. Careful. That probably isn't the only trick up her sleeve. Nice ship, he said, extinguishing his lightsaber and letting his hand fall casually to his side. How many credits did that set you back? As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he pounced toward her, his reignited lightsaber carving a deadly figure-eight pattern meant to disembowel his unsuspecting foe, even as she answered his question. The Anik'Tochi wasn't fooled. Instead of replying to his query, she took a quick step back and to the side, nimbly avoiding his attack. Too slow, she admonished. The two adversaries turned to face each other again, and Set paused to consider the situation. He had Undedu's holocron. All he needed now was a ship, and he was home free. But standing between him and escape was an unknown, though obviously skilled, opponent. She didn't appear to be armed, but she could easily have blades, blasters, or any number of other weapons hidden in the folds of her cloak. He decided it might be a good idea to try to talk his way out of the situation. My name is Med Tandar. He lied, trying to project an air of noble self-importance into his voice. I'm here on behalf of the Council of First Knowledge. Step aside in the name of the Jedi Order.
You're no Jedi, she replied.
Not anymore, Set confessed, but I used to be. He sliced the air half a dozen times with his lightsaber. He spun around, the humming blade dancing and twirling, before ending the demonstration with a backflip. The Anik'Tochi was obviously unimpressed by his display of martial prowess, and Set realized he wasn't going to intimidate her into backing down.
The Jedi teach you any useful tricks?
A few, Set replied, thrusting out with the Force. A wave of raw energy rippled out toward his enemy, but Set knew instantly something was very wrong. Instead of the exhilarating rush of power he normally felt, there was a cramping ache in the pit of his stomach that caused him to double over. The concussive wave that should have sent the Anik'Tochi flying 20 meters was reduced to nothing more than a hard shove. It hit her full in the chest, but she simply absorbed the impact by falling into a backward roll that ended with her still on her feet. A pair of short vibroblades appeared in her hands while Set staggered backward, clutching at his stomach and trying not to throw up. With horror, he realized she was disrupting his ability to draw on the Force. He'd seen this talent mentioned in a number of ancient texts, but he'd never encountered it himself, and he didn't know how to counter it. His only option was to try to fight through. Gritting his teeth, he stood up straight. Feeding on the pain and his mounting anger, he tried once more to summon up the power of the dark side. He felt a small surge in response to his efforts, but it was a thin trickle, rather than the flood he'd been hoping for. Still, it was better than nothing. The Itochi lunged in with her twin blades, and Set staggered awkwardly out of the way, barely avoiding her attack. She moved faster than any opponent he had ever faced. Or maybe her ability to interfere with the force was just making him slower than he'd ever been. In either case, the outcome was the same, and it wasn't good for Set. He ducked his head and darted under the nose of the black and red shuttle to the far side, knowing his best chance of survival would be to keep 10 tons of metal between the two of them. He couldn't see her anymore, but by concentrating, he was just barely able to sense her position. The effort made his head spin. It was like trying to see with mud in his eyes. She was stalking him slowly, cautiously creeping around the tail end of the ship. And in that moment, Set realized his opponent had no formal training in the ways of the Force. She was operating on instinct. She had never been taught the most basic skills, like how to sense the location of opponents, even when they were out of sight. Set turned and made a dash for one of the other vessels, reaching his new hiding place just before she emerged from behind the Black Shuttle's thrusters. Crouching down to peer beneath the belly of the ship he was using for cover, he could see her turning her head from side to side, trying to figure out where he had gone. "I love a good chase," she called out, her lips curling into a feral smile. "That's why they call me the Huntress." "This isn't going to end well," Set thought. Bane could still feel the lingering effects of the drugs in his system. He'd done what he could to burn them away with the fire of the dark side, but the Sith were not as adept as the Jedi at cleansing their system of impurities. The last dregs of the chemicals would simply have to break down naturally over time. Until then, he would be at less than full strength, a fraction slower in thoughts and actions, less adept at wielding the power of the Force. And he was still without his lightsaber. Despite all this, he was confident victory was only minutes away. The alarms were still ringing throughout the dungeon, but he knew there would be no guards rushing in to answer their call. The few mercenaries who had survived his attack were in full retreat, leaving Khalid's daughter defenseless. Sometimes vengeance needed to be cold and calculating. There were times when it was better to be careful, patient. But sometimes, retribution could not be deferred. Sometimes action needed to be fueled by anger and hate. It needed to burn with the heat of animal emotion. Peace is a lie. There is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. He could sense he was closing in on Sarah's location. His stride quickened as he marched purposefully down the empty corridors toward his revenge. Through power, I gain victory. Through victory, my chains are broken. He had been careless, weak. He had allowed himself to be captured. He had let himself become a victim. For that, he had suffered. But now he was strong again. Now, it was someone else's turn to suffer. "Dez!" A voice from behind him shouted over the alarms. The mention of the name he had left behind 20 years ago caused the Sith Lord to stop dead in his tracks. He turned slowly and found himself face to face with the dark-skinned woman who had aided his escape. She was breathing hard, as if she had been running. Her pants were torn over the left knee. The edges of the rip were bloody. Her face was a mixture of conflicting emotions, fear, desperation, and hope. "Do you remember me, Dez? It's Lucia." For a second, Bane simply stared in confusion at the woman standing before him. Then he began to think back to his youth, to a time when he was not Darth Bane, Lord of the Sith, but rather Dez, a simple miner from Apatros. The memories were buried deep, but they were still there. The weekly beatings from Hurst, his father, long, grueling shifts digging cortosis from the rock while choking on clouds of dust stirred up by his hydraulic jack. His escape from the misery of Apatros, and his assignment to the Gloomwalkers. It was like trying to recall a dream upon waking. These were scenes from someone else's life. They didn't feel real to him. But as he cast his mind back, other memories began to surface. Long nights sitting watch on Trandosha. Forced marches through the forests of Kashyyyk. Stirring up the ghosts of the past brought back the face of Ulibor, the cruel and incompetent commanding officer who had inadvertently turned Dez over to the Sith and set him on the path of his true destiny. But there were other faces, too. The men and women of his unit, his brothers and sisters in arms. He remembered the blue eyes and cocksure grin of Adenar, his best friend. And he remembered a wide-eyed junior trooper, a young sniper named Lucia. Bane had intelligence and foresight. He had the wisdom and vision to redefine the Sith Order so that it could begin its long, slow ascent to galactic domination. He had schemed and planned for nearly every conceivable situation he might one day find himself in, yet he had never prepared himself for this. He knew many of the former soldiers who served in Khan's armies had become mercenaries and bodyguards, but he had never considered the possibility of ever running into someone who had known him before his transformation through the dark side. After joining the Sith, he hadn't allowed himself to wonder or care about what had happened to the people from his past. He had needed to learn to survive alone, to rely on nobody but himself. Attachment to family and friends was a weakness, a chain to bind and drag you down. Now, someone from the life he had worked so hard to forget was standing between him and his revenge. She was an obstacle in his way, one to be easily overcome. He knew he could cast her aside as easily as he disposed of the guards outside his cell. Instead, he asked, "Why did you help me?" "We served together in the Gloomwalkers," she answered, as if that explained everything. "I know who you are," he told her. She hesitated, as if she expected him to say more. When he didn't, she continued to speak. "You saved my life on Fassira. You saved all our lives. And not just then. You were there in every battle we fought, watching over us, protecting us."
"I was a fool back then."
"No! You were a hero. I owe you my life a dozen times over. How could I not help you?" At first he thought she was a sentimental idiot, blinded by irrational nobility and spouting foolish drivel. But then he realized what was really going on, and it all began to make sense. She had released him, hoping to win his favor. She was after something. That was why she had betrayed Khalib's daughter, for her own personal gain.
"What do you want?"
he demanded, the alarms a constant reminder that time was running short.
"I want... please. I'm begging you. Let Sera live."
Her request made no sense. Lucia's actions were the only reason Sera's life was in danger.
"Why? What use is her life to me?"
The woman didn't answer right away. She was searching for something to offer, but in the end, she had nothing. "Look into your heart, Dez. Think back on the man you used to be. I know you turned to the dark side to survive. Becoming a Sith was the only way you could survive. Please, Dez. I know part of what you used to be still lives inside you."
"My name is not Dez," he said, his voice rising as he stood up to his full height so that he towered over Lucia. "I am Darth Bane, Dark Lord of the Sith. I feel neither pity nor gratitude nor remorse. And Khalib's daughter must pay for what she did to me."
"I won't let you do this," she declared, spreading her stance wide and bracing herself before him.
"You can't stop me," he warned her. "You can't save her by sacrificing yourself. Are you willing to throw your life away for no purpose?"
Lucia didn't budge. "I already said I owe you my life. If you want to take it now, that is your right." Bane's mind flashed back to his first encounter with Khalib on Ambria. The healer had stood before him as Lucia did now, utterly defiant, despite the knowledge he was no match for a Sith Lord. Yet Khalib had known he had something Bane needed. Lucia could make no such claim. There was nothing to stop him from extinguishing her life in a single instant. He began to gather the dark side, the power slowly building. But before he could unleash it, he was hit by a wall of thunderous force rolling out from a corridor to his left. Instinctively, he threw up a defensive shield, absorbing the blow. Despite this, he was slammed against the opposite wall, knocking the breath from his lungs. Lucia was not so fortunate. Unable to call upon the force to protect herself, she was sent careering down the corridor, flipping and twisting. Her skull smashed against the stone half a dozen times as her body ricocheted off the walls and ceiling, reducing it to a bloody, misshapen mess. Her corpse finally tumbled to a stop 30 meters away, where the hall made an abrupt 90-degree turn. Bane was back on his feet in an instant, turning to face his foe. "You couldn't bring yourself to kill her," Xana said, her voice filled with contempt. "You've become weak. No wonder you tried to violate the rule of two." She was standing with her double-bladed lightsaber drawn, the hilt grasped firmly in her hand. Her arm was extended, holding the weapon out in front of her, the twin blades horizontal to the floor. It was a defensive posture, one meant to guard against a sudden attack from an armed opponent. He realized Xana didn't know that he hadn't found his lightsaber yet. "I have lived by the principles of the rule of two ever since I created it," Bane replied. "Everything I have done has been in accordance with its teachings." Xana shook her head. "I know you went to Prakith. I know you went after Andedu's holocron. I know you were searching for the secret of eternal life. I did that out of necessity. I taught you everything I knew about the dark side. I waited years for you to challenge me. But you were content to toil in my shadow, to remain an apprentice until the ravages of age robbed me of my power." All thoughts of Lucia were gone, swept away along with the memories of his past life. The only thing he cared about was this confrontation, for he knew the fate of the Sith hinged on the outcome. "You are unworthy of becoming the Master, Xana. That was why I went to Prakith." "No," Xana said, her voice calm and cold. "You won't turn this back on me. You said you were training me so that I would one day succeed you. You said it was my destiny to become the Master. Now you want to live forever. You want to cling to the mantle of Dark Lord of the Sith and deny me what is mine." "That mantle must be earned," Bane countered. "You wanted to wait, to take it by default." "You taught me patience," she reminded him. "You taught me to bide my time."
"Not in this," Bane shouted. "Only the strongest has the right to rule the Sith. The title of Dark Lord must be seized, wrenched from the all-powerful grasp of the Master."
"That is why I'm here," Xana said with a grim smile. "I have found an apprentice of my own. I am ready to embrace my destiny."
"Do you really believe you can defeat me?"
Bane let his right hand drop to his hip, fainting, as if he was preparing to draw his lightsaber. His only chance to survive was to somehow trick her into backing down. Xana's eyes flickered, drawn by the subtle motion. He kept his hand open, his massive palm completely covering the place where she would normally be able to see the hilt of his lightsaber clipped to his belt. With his mind, he tried to project an image of his hook-handled weapon resting just beneath his empty fingers. His apprentice didn't move. She stayed in her defensive stance, her brow furrowing as she weighed her chances. Then her gaze fell on Bane's left hand, quivering ever so slightly with one of the uncontrollable tremors. "You allowed yourself to be captured by mercenaries," she said, slowly twirling her weapon and taking a confident step forward. Bane held his ground, clenching the fingers of his left hand so that they dug into the palm, stilling the tremor. "You couldn't bring yourself to kill the woman who stood in your way." She took another step toward him, casually tossing her lightsaber from one hand to the other. Had Bane been armed, it would have been the perfect opening to launch a sudden attack. When he failed to do so, she tilted her head back and laughed. "You even let yourself get trapped in these halls without your lightsaber." She took another step forward, and Bane responded by taking several steps back. The double-bladed lightsaber began to pick up speed, slicing the air in quick circular patterns. She had one final thing to say before she launched herself at him. Your time is over, Bane. Chapter 22. Sarah stood as if she was paralyzed, her finger hovering just above the button that would confirm the Stone Prison's self-destruct sequence and initiate the destruction of the facility and everyone in it. She had been standing in this exact position for several minutes, unable to push the button.
Do it! Who cares about Lucia? She betrayed you! Do it!
The princess took a deep breath, then let her hand fall. But instead of hitting confirm, she pressed the key marked cancel. There was a soft beep, and the glowing keyboard became dark as it powered down. She couldn't do it. As much as she didn't want the prisoner to escape, she simply couldn't bring herself to condemn Lucia to death. The older woman had been more than her bodyguard. She had been Sarah's confidant and closest friend. Whatever she did, there must have been a reason. And she owed it to her friend to find out what that reason was. Leaving the small confines of the emergency control room behind her, Sarah headed back out into the hall. With the alarms ringing, there was no need to worry about the sound of her footsteps giving away her position. She set off in a brisk jog, making her way back up the long hall toward the cells where the prisoner had been held in search of her friend. He's looking for you, and he won't need to hear your footsteps to hunt you down. Do you really think you can find Lucia before he finds you? The princess understood the risk, but she had already lost her husband and her father. She wasn't about to lose her best friend, too. Even if that meant confronting the monster from her nightmares one more time. Winding her way through the corridors of the complex, she headed back to where the Itochi had first told her of Lucia's betrayal. Before she got there, however, she saw a body lying up ahead, crumpled against the wall where the passage bent around a sharp corner. No, she whispered under her breath as she broke into a run.
No!
She recognized Lucia's body long before she crouched down before her. Her arms and legs jutted out at bizarre angles, the bones snapped clean through. These injuries were nothing compared with the trauma that had been inflicted to her face and skull. As Sarah knelt over her friend's corpse, she didn't cry any tears, however. Instead of grief, she felt only a strange numbness fall across her mind. This is your fault. If you hadn't been so set on seeking revenge, if you hadn't brought the prisoner here, none of this would have happened. Lucia would still be alive. The voice inside her head spoke the truth, but Sarah still felt nothing. It was as if her emotions, so damaged by the deaths of Garen and Kalib, had finally shut down completely. Then she became aware of a strange, high-pitched hum behind the clang of the alarms. Not the sound of any lightsaber she had ever heard, and not a sound her ears found comfortable. She rose and walked farther down the hall toward the source of the noise, leaving Lucia's broken body behind her. As she drew nearer, she began to hear other sounds, grunts of exertion, short exclamations of anger and pain, the heavy thump of feet on the stone floor. She recognized them as the sounds of battle. No blasters, though. Reaching the intersection of another corridor, she saw a flicker of movement from the corner of her eye. Turning to the left, she saw two figures at the far end of the passage, less than 20 meters away from where she stood. She recognized the prisoner instantly. The second figure she had never seen before, yet she knew who this was. The blonde woman the Huntress spoke of. They were facing each other, clearly locked in an intense struggle. The prisoner was nearly twice the size of his opponent, but she was clearly the aggressor. The woman was armed with a double-bladed lightsaber. But the prisoner had no weapon as far as Sarah could tell. He was backing up warily, his eyes locked on the woman as she approached. She was closing in on him slowly, trying to back him into a corner and cut off his retreat. Just before she had him pinned, however, a bolt of violet lightning shot forth from his palm. The woman countered by catching the bolt with one of her lightsaber blades. It absorbed the energy, emitting the strange high-pitched hum Sarah had heard earlier. The two combatants were so focused on each other that neither had noticed Sarah. She should have been terrified. She should have turned and fled, running back the way she had come. Yet she felt only the empty calm that had settled over her on discovering Lucia's body. Without any real sense of urgency, she turned and walked back down the hall to where her friend lay on the floor. Crouching down, she seized the muscular woman by her wrists and began to drag her down the hall, groaning under the strain as she walked backward. Burdened by the weight, she made her way slowly back to the control room. The muscles in her neck, shoulders, and lower back began to throb almost immediately, but Sarah didn't stop. The sensation was muted, as numb and distant as her feelings of grief. Eventually, she reached the control room, but she didn't pause at the self-destruct console. Instead, she dragged Lucia through the door at the back and, with some difficulty, hoisted her into the hold of the small escape shuttle. Then she returned to the keypad and punched in the self-destruct code. This time, there was no hesitation before she pushed the confirm button. The sound of the alarms changed. Instead of the relentless clang, clang, clang warning of an escaped prisoner, it became a long, whooping wail. Sarah knew she had only a few minutes before the first series of explosions would begin. But she couldn't bring herself to leave. Not yet. Time seemed to stand still as she stood by the console, waiting expectantly. Hours seemed to pass, though in truth it was only a matter of minutes. And then she felt a small tremor beneath her feet. The shock wave from the first detonation in the deepest level of the facility. A few seconds later, it was followed by another tremor. And then another after that. Satisfied, she turned and headed out to the escape shuttle. The destruction of the stone prison had begun. The Huntress had never faced a more frustrating opponent. Despite the lightsaber in his hand, the man refused to stand and fight. He ducked and ran back and forth between the hulls of the ships, moving from one hiding place to another. Always a step ahead of her. She could have sheathed her vibroblades and drawn the twin blasters tucked inside the folds of her cloak, but she knew it wouldn't do any good. Her adversary was too quick for her to ever get a clear shot, and even if she did, he probably just slapped the bolt away with his lightsaber. She caught a glimpse of him darting across the aisle between her shuttle and the one parked beside it. She didn't chase him, though. She turned and ran behind her own shuttle, taking a path parallel to his in the hope of cutting him off. Chewing the ground up with long, effortless strides, she raced around the side of the ship, hoping to flank her unsuspecting opponent. Instead, she came within a centimeter of being decapitated as his lightsaber came hurtling through the air toward her. She let herself collapse to the ground, falling awkwardly back into the side as her legs shot out from under her. The maneuver was ungainly, but it saved her life. The deadly energy blade whistled by her ear, slicing a thumb-sized chunk out of one of her horns before circling back on a tight arc and returning to her opponent's hand. Ignoring the stinging pain from her horn, she scrambled back to her feet, vibroblades ready. But her opponent didn't press his advantage. He disappeared again, vanishing around the nose of the ship. Her injury wasn't serious. Itachi horns contained no vital organs or major arteries. Even if completely severed, the wound would not be life-threatening, though it would be agonizingly painful. In time, the missing chunk would even grow back, leaving no evidence of how close she had come to dying in the hangar. But she had nearly died. She realized her opponent was cunning. He had wanted her to see him, knowing she'd double around to try and cut him off. She had underestimated him, and he had manipulated her, goading her into a careless mistake. He had set a trap, and she had walked right into it. She wouldn't make the same mistake twice. Set crouched down behind one of the ships, gasping for breath. To some extent, he had been able to resist the Itachi's strange ability. He was able to fight through her ability to draw on the Force, but the effort had left him exhausted. And it still messed you up enough so that she was able to dodge your lightsaber. The Dark Jedi frowned at the memory of how close he had come to ending this battle, even as he forced himself to get up and get moving again. He couldn't stay in one place for more than a few seconds, not unless he wanted to end up dead. He knew she'd be more careful now. He'd missed his best chance. The Itachi was too quick for him to beat in a straight-up fight. not with her disrupting his connection to the Force and slowing him down. So far, he'd managed to avoid a direct confrontation, but he couldn't keep running for much longer. He had a stitch in his side, and his lungs felt like they were going to burst. Unless something happened to change the situation, the outcome was inevitable. As if in answer to his prayers, there was a sudden change in the sound of the alarms. It only took Set a moment to figure out what had happened, and a new escape plan began to form in his mind. The Huntress heard the change in the sound of the alarms, and she knew that they had maybe 5 minutes before the detonations began, and maybe 10 before the entire complex was reduced to rubble. Her opponent noticed the change as well.
"Hear that?" he called out from somewhere on the other side of the hangar. "This whole place is going to come crashing down around our ears. Why don't we each just hop on one of these shuttles and get out of here before that happens?" "I still have enough time to find you," she shouted back, slowly heading in the direction of his voice. It sounded like he was near one of the shuttles on the far side of the room. "You're getting tired, wearing down. You won't last much longer."
"I was afraid you'd say that,"
he answered as she stepped from behind one of the ships, giving her a clear view of the man she'd been chasing. He was leaning casually against the side of one of the shuttles, near the thrusters at the rear. He glanced toward her but made no attempt to hide. Instead, he just stood there, holding his lightsaber casually at his side. Wary of walking into another trap, the Huntress began a cautious approach. As she took her first step, the silver-haired man pulled his arm back and brought his lightsaber down hard against the shuttle's hull. There was a shower of sparks, and the blade bit a full centimeter into the ship's reinforced exterior plating. The man pulled his arm back and struck again, hitting precisely the same spot, the glowing blade carving even deeper this time. It was only on the third blow that the Huntress realized what he was doing. The third chop brought the lightsaber deep enough to sever one of the shuttle's fuel lines. Her opponent flung himself backward, and she threw herself to the floor as a stray spark ignited the flammable liquid. Hundreds of tiny metal shards that had once been a fuel cell were sent hurtling through the air. The shuttle bucked once, its tail leaping a full meter off the ground from the force of the blast. A thick cloud of greasy black smoke curled up from the gash the lightsaber had left in the hull. "Amazing weapons, aren't they?" the man noted as she picked herself up from the ground. "Cut through almost anything." His face was cut and scraped from flying debris, but somehow, probably through shielding himself with the Force, he had managed to avoid the worst of the explosion. Before she could reply, he had ducked around the corner of the shuttle, disappearing from sight once again. A few seconds later, she heard the unmistakable sound of the lightsaber shearing through metal yet again from the far side of the hangar. She broke into a run, heading in the direction of the noise. She was only halfway there when another explosion knocked her to the ground. When she got back to her feet, she saw that a second shuttle had been disabled. Knowing his next target, she turned and ran toward the stalker. She pulled up short when she came around a corner and saw her opponent standing beside her shuttle, his hand gently along the hull.
"What are you doing?"
the Huntress shouted.
"All I want is to get out of here alive," he explained. "But for some reason, you seem intent on killing me."
"You took the first swing at me," she reminded him,
"when I caught you about to steal my ship."
"A simple misunderstanding," he said, waving his hand to dismiss her accusations. "There are two shuttles left. You take yours and leave the other one for me, and we never have to see each other again."
"What if I say no?"
"Then I destroy your shuttle, and we see if you can stop me before I get to the last one." "My guess is you can't. And then we're both stuck here when these walls come crashing down."
"You're a coward," the assassin shot back. "You wouldn't even stand and fight me. Now you expect me to believe you'd sacrifice yourself to trap us both here?"
"I'm a realist," the man explained. "If we fight, I'm dead. If I trap us here, I'm dead. Either way, the outcome is the same. But if I destroy the shuttles,
Then at least I take you with me. She didn't answer right away. It was possible he was telling the truth. People did desperate things when cornered. Her thoughts seized on the hooked handle in her belt. He wasn't the only one armed with a lightsaber. She briefly considered trying to use the weapon she'd taken from the Sith Lord's mansion to block the attack if he tried to damage her shuttle, then dismissed the idea. She had no training or experience. She'd never even held a lightsaber until a few days ago. Even if she did, by the time she crossed the distance between them, the damage could have been done. Next, she tried to calculate her odds of getting to the last remaining shuttle before her enemy could disable it. She might be able to beat him there, but as soon as she climbed inside the cockpit, he'd be able to run up and wreak havoc on the engines. Finally, she weighed the possibility that he wouldn't actually go through with his threat. Even when faced with a hopeless situation, few people would have the strength of will to destroy their only chance of escape. There was a very good chance he was bluffing. But even if he was, what did she gain by calling his bluff? She didn't know anything about this man, who he was, how he got here, or why he had shown up in the first place. What did she really accomplish by killing him? And what did she lose by letting him go? The only reason she hadn't left yet was the belief that this was where she would find her destiny. Whether this man lived or died was of no consequence compared with that. A deep thrumming boom rolled through the cavern. The silver-haired man swayed slightly on his feet. "We're running out of time," he warned, cocking his arm back and taking aim. "We have a deal," she shouted. "Stay where I can see you," the man warned, backing away from her carefully. Keeping his eye on her, he scooted over to the other shuttle. He disappeared around the far side of the vessel. She heard him fumbling with the access panel as he sliced the security systems, followed by the unmistakable whoosh of the boarding ramp descending. A few seconds later, he reappeared, visible in the cockpit viewport. The Huntress simply watched, knowing there was nothing she could do. Unlike a lightsaber, neither her vibroblades nor her blasters were capable of inflicting any serious damage on the hull of a shuttle. She momentarily considered drawing the lightsaber and mimicking the trick he had used against her. But even if she was able to damage his vessel, it just meant he would still be here. And she'd have to find some way to get to her own ship before he returned the favor. The shuttle engines roared to life as it rose up and turned to face the exit, hovering for an instant just below the chamber's high ceiling. She could clearly see the domed royal crest on the side, as well as the silver-haired man inside the cockpit. He waved to her and flashed a self-satisfied smile. And then the thrusters kicked in, and the ship swooped away, flying out of the hangar and disappearing into the night sky. For the first time in the Huntress's life, someone she had wanted to kill had gotten away. Yet, it would be a small price to pay if she managed to find what she was truly looking for. Chapter 23. Zanna wasn't used to being the aggressor. In all the time she and Bane had sparred, he had been the one pressing the action. Her lightsaber style was built on a foundation of parries and counterstrikes, hiding behind her virtually impenetrable defense while waiting for her opponent to make a mistake. This confrontation was completely different. Yet even though Bane had no lightsaber, that didn't mean he was helpless. Zanna knew she couldn't simply rush in. Despite his bulk, Bane was incredibly quick and agile. He had also learned close-quarters pit-fighting tactics during his days as a miner and soldier. She had to be wary of letting him get close enough to grapple her. She couldn't let him get the opportunity to use his size and strength against her. There was also his incredible command of the Force to contend with. Simple tactics like pushing an opponent from across the room were impractical against any foe with proper training. Both she and Bane knew how to surround themselves with an invisible field of energy that absorbed or repelled the most basic tricks taught to any Jedi or Sith. But Bane could unleash devastating bolts of dark side lightning from his hands almost at will. As long as she was careful, she was able to avoid them or intercept them with her lightsaber. This caution, however, allowed her master to keep her off balance just enough to stay alive. The pair were entwined in an intricate dance. She swept in low, spinning and twirling her lightsaber. He leapt up high, planting his feet on the wall at his side and pushing up hard, sending himself into a tumbling roll just beyond the reach for Blade's arc. Back on his feet, he sprang backward as Xana stabbed her blade straight forward, keeping just out of range. She pursued him down the length of the hall, jabbing and thrusting her weapon and sending the Dark Lord into a full retreat. Bane fought back with short, concentrated bursts of lightning, aiming at her boots to disrupt her footwork and keep her off balance. Xana took quick stuttering steps to avoid the attack and keep him from gaining a reprieve. Bane fainted, as if he was going to fall back to the right, then lunged forward, flipping over her head and reaching down with a huge hand to seize her wrist. She ducked out of the way, lashing out with a kick as he landed behind her. Bane spun, grabbed her ankle, and wrenched the boot to the side, trying to snap the bone. Xana rolled with a violent motion, her entire body spinning along a horizontal plane. At the same time, she brought her lightsaber back up over her shoulder to slice Bane's arm off at the elbow, but caught only air as he released his hold and fell back once more. She had him cornered against the wall with nowhere to go. As she moved in for the kill, another burst of lightning came toward her. She caught it with her lightsaber, but the impact drove her backward a step, giving Bane just enough room to duck down beneath her coup de grace and scramble clear of the wall. They had switched positions, each facing the opposite way as they began the dance yet again. The ebb and flow of their battle fell into a rhythm of feints and counters, their dance keeping time to the clanging alarms as she forced him back up the hall she had chased him down only moments before. Xana suspected if their positions were reversed, Bane might have ended the confrontation already. Yet she knew her victory was inevitable. Her master was in an impossible situation. He needed to do everything exactly right just to keep her at bay for another pass. He had no margin for error. But even the Dark Lord of the Sith couldn't sustain perfection forever. The only way she could lose would be to make a careless mistake. The best Bane could hope for was to try to frustrate her with his elusiveness. But Xana understood patience. She had waited 20 years for this moment, and she was content to play their battle out as long as necessary. They reached the end of the hall, and Xana thought she had Bane trapped. This time, she used her lightsaber to slap aside the violet bolts of lightning, rather than trying to absorb them and stumbling back. Bane still had one more trick up his sleeve, however. She was less than a meter away, her blade already slashing in for the killing blow, when she felt all the hair on the back of her neck rise. A shimmering purple cocoon of dark side energy enveloped Bane, a fragile shell holding back a storm of pure power. She tried to pull back, but it was too late. As her blade bit into the cocoon, the energy was released in a sudden burst that sent both of them flying backward. Bane slammed hard into the wall against his back and crumpled to the ground. Xana was tossed 10 meters farther, landing hard on the stone floor. They rose to their feet at the same time, neither seriously injured. But yet again, Bane had managed to thwart her attack and work himself out of a corner. Xana merely shrugged and began another slow, relentless advance. She paused for a moment when the sound of the alarms changed. She knew almost instantly what had happened. They had only a few minutes to escape before the explosions buried them alive. There were two options: break off the battle and run for the ship, or throw caution to the wind and take one last reckless charge at her master. She couldn't let Bane get away. She had to end this now. As she gathered herself to charge, Bane fired off another bolt of lightning. She ducked to the side, and it whizzed past her ear, striking the wall and sending up a shower of dust and stone flecks. Despite missing her the first time, Bane followed it up with another blast on the exact same trajectory. Turning her head to follow the course of the misguided bolt, Xana saw where the first had hit the wall. The stone had been disintegrated in a fist-sized hole, revealing something that looked like bright red plastic beneath it.
She recognized it as the casing of a demolition charge, just in time to throw herself backward, using the force to shield herself from the worst of the explosion. She was thrown clear as the entire wall blew out, sending huge chunks of stone spewing into the passage. The ceiling was shredded, tearing loose massive blocks that tumbled to the ground. Choking on the cloud of dust and smoke, Xana picked herself up. The passage in front of her was completely blocked by rubble and debris from the blast. She could feel Bane on the other side of the rocks. He had survived the blast, just as she had. But now they were separated by tons of impassable stone. She walked slowly over to the collapsed section of the hallway and placed a hand on the edge of one of the massive stones blocking her way. Even using the force, it would take hours to clear a path. There was no way to deny the truth. She had him, and she had let him get away. The vibrations of another explosion, this one far away in some deep chamber of the dungeon, rumbled up through the floor, reminding her she was out of time. Cursing her missed opportunity, she turned and ran back the way she had come, racing for her ship. Overhead, the evacuation alarms continued to wail. Bane had hoped his apprentice would be caught off guard by his unexpected tactic. There was a small chance he would actually be killed by the explosion, buried under the collapsing rock. But as he picked himself up in the aftermath, he could sense she was still alive. Despite the fact she'd been trying to kill him, the knowledge brought him a small measure of satisfaction. He had trained her well. The primary goal of the explosion hadn't been to kill her, anyway. The desperate ploy was actually Bane's last chance to escape a battle he knew he couldn't win. In that, he had been successful. Though, if he wanted to survive, he still had to find a way out of the prison before the whole place came crashing down. He had no real sense of where he was in the labyrinthine dungeon. Before Xana found him, he had been following Khalib's daughter, letting the force guide him with no real conscious thought as to the path he was taking. Reaching out with his mind, he sensed that the princess was gone now. But Bane had slaughtered more than a dozen guards during his escape. They had to have shuttles somewhere in the facility. And even if he didn't know where to find them, he knew he could trust in the force. He broke into a run, darting left and right down passages as they opened up without any thought or hesitation, doing his best to ignore the incessant howls of the evacuation alarms. Throughout his life, even before he had known who and what he was, he had been guided by the Force. During his military career, he had led a charmed life, somehow leading the Gloomwalkers virtually unscathed through some of the war's bloodiest campaigns. He had simply considered himself lucky, or blessed with good instincts. He skidded around a corner, his boots losing traction for a second. At the same time, he felt the shockwave of a massive explosion rippling up from chambers somewhere far below. He fought for his balance and managed to keep his feet, accelerating down the next hall. It was impossible to tell if he was going in the right direction. The unadorned stone walls looked the same in every passage. He felt the reverberations of a second distant explosion, reminding him that he was running out of time. Yet the slope of the corridor was leading him upward, which encouraged him. It was only after he had begun his training at the Sith Academy on Korriban that he realized his incredible run of fortune had actually been a manifestation of the Force. Even before he was aware of its power, it had acted through him, shaping the events of his life by guiding and directing his choices and actions. Learning to harness that power, to take control of his destiny, rather than to let it keep controlling him, had allowed him to ascend to his current position. The Force had become a tool. Its power was his to command and bend to his will. But here, only minutes away from complete annihilation, Bane allowed himself to revert to the ways of his youth. Focusing on trying to find a way out would require effort and concentration that would only slow him down. He couldn't think and plan. He had to react and hope. He wheeled around another corner, sprinted down a short hall, and charged out onto a steel balcony overlooking a massive high-roofed chamber. He arrived just in time to see a shuttle with a Doan royal crest rising up and flying away. For an instant he thought the princess might be on board, However, when he reached out, he felt a very different presence piloting the craft. Someone with a powerful connection to the dark side. Bane couldn't allow his attention to be drawn by the mysterious individual escaping in the shuttle, however. He had a far more pressing problem. From his vantage point atop the balcony, he could clearly see the Itochi, who had led the ambush against them back at his mansion. She was dressed in the same black cloak, and she was standing beside a black and red shuttle. She had been looking at the escaping vehicle, but as it sped away, she turned to face Bane. Seeing him, an expression of satisfaction flickered across her features. "I have been waiting for you," she called out to him. The last time they had fought, she had bested him. This time, he was unarmed and drained from his battle with Xana. Yet he was still confident he could defeat her. Without the advantage of surprise and 20 mercenaries backing her up, she was no match for him one-on-one. And if she cut him with her poisoned blades again, he'd be ready to burn away the toxin before it overwhelmed his system. Bane grabbed the railing of the balcony and pulled himself over, ignoring the tremor caused by another explosion from inside the facility. His feet were already moving as he hit the floor below, driving him toward his foe. To his surprise, the Itochi didn't retreat as he bore down on her. She didn't even draw her weapons. Instead, she dropped to one knee and bowed her head, holding her hands out palms up as if presenting him with an offering. The unexpected reaction caused him to pull up short a few meters from her. At this distance, he could clearly see she was holding the hooked handle of his missing lightsaber, and what appeared to be his own holocron in her hands.
"A gift, my lord," she said, tilting her head to look up at him.
"You tried to kill me," Bane said warily, not taking his eyes off her.
"I was hired to capture you," she corrected. "It was just a job. Now that job is finished."
Reaching out, Bane took the hilt from her hand. His fingers slipped around the familiar curved grip and ignited the blade. The Itochi rose to her feet but showed no fear.
"Why are you still here?" Bane asked.
"I knew you had broken free," she explained. "I hoped you might come here during your escape."
"You had a premonition I would find you?"
Bane was aware the Itochi was supposed to have precognitive abilities, but he had only the vaguest idea of how powerful or accurate their visions might be.
"Night after night, I have seen you in my visions," she answered. "Our destinies are intertwined."
"What if your destiny is to die at my hand?"
he asked, raising up his blade.
"Neither of us is fated to die in this place, my lord."
As if in opposition to her words, another explosion from inside the facility rocked the chamber.
"What do you want from me?"
"Let me study under you," she implored, seemingly oblivious to the rapidly mounting danger from the collapsing prison. "Instruct me in the dark side. Teach me the ways of the Sith."
"Do you realize what you are asking?" Bane demanded.
"My existence has no meaning," the Itochi explained. "You can give my life purpose. You can guide me to my destiny."
"What can you offer me in return?"
"Loyalty. Devotion. A shuttle to escape this prison before it collapses. And Kaleeb's daughter."
The next explosion was close enough that they could actually hear it echoing from down the hall.
"I accept,"
Bane said, extinguishing his lightsaber after a moment's consideration. Less than a minute later, they were aboard the Itochi shuttle, leaving the stone prison and the final violent throes of its destruction behind them. Xana was retracing her steps, following the long route back through the dungeon and up to the small hangar where she hoped Set and her shuttle would still be waiting for her. Her entire body was infused with the Force, her legs propelling her along so fast the wind caused her hair to stream out behind her. As she ran, she could feel the tremors rising up from deep within the dungeon, each blast a little nearer than the one before it. The explosion Bane had caused had been a single charge set off by his crackling bolt of lightning. These explosions were far more powerful. 8 or 10 charges in close proximity, all detonating at the same time, collapsing not a small stretch of corridor, but rather an entire section of the facility. By the time she crossed from the lit halls of the reopened areas of the dungeon into the darkened passages of the unused wing where she had first come in, the explosions were close enough for her to hear them, as well as feel the vibrations through the floor. They were coming more frequently now, too. Instead of every 10 seconds, they pounded out in a steady rhythm. She plunged into the blackness, not even bothering with a glow stick. Her breath was ragged and irregular, but her stride never faltered. Every muscle and nerve in her body was tingling with the power of the Force. Her senses heightened to supernatural levels. She didn't need to see to find her way. Like a bat, she could hear the alarms echoing off the walls, floor, and ceiling, painting a sonar image of her surroundings. The rumbling boom, boom, boom of the charges rang out in counterpoint to the wail of the alarms. When she burst into the hangar, where her shuttle waited, she was surprised by 2 things. The first was how bright the lights from her shuttle seemed after the total darkness of the subterranean passages she had been racing through. The second was that said hearth was missing. She'd always suspected he might cut and run, but she couldn't think of a reason Set would disappear, but still leave her shuttle behind. She didn't have time to worry about it now, however. She heard the roar of another explosion, this one so close it actually made the walls of the hangar shake. Jumping into the shuttle, she fired it up as another detonation caused the entire vessel to rock back and forth on its struts. Fighting not to be thrown from the pilot's chair, Xana pulled back on the stick, and the ship rose up off the ground. Banking sharply, she turned it toward the entrance and jammed her fist down on the thrusters. The Victory sprang forward, hurtling through the cavern's mouth, as the final explosion set off the charges built into the hangar walls, collapsing the entire structure behind her. Safely away, Xana punched in a trajectory and activated the autopilot, letting the ship skim across Doan's surface as she tried to catch her breath. The mad dash to freedom had left her both mentally and physically exhausted. Her body was covered in sweat, and the muscles of her thighs and calves were quivering as she slumped in her seat, threatening to cramp up at any second. She had survived, but she could hardly call the mission a success. She had let Bane slip through her fingers, and she had no doubt her master had found a way to escape the stone prison's destruction, just as she had. On top of that, she had lost her apprentice. She didn't know if Set had escaped, or if he had perished in the blast, and she had no easy way to find out. The connection she had forged with Bane over 20 years was strong enough to stretch across the breadth of the galaxy. She would feel his death no matter where or when it happened. Set had only been her apprentice for a few days. She would sense him if he was in close proximity, as she would any individual who possessed a powerful affinity for the Force. But there was no special bond between them. But Set was the least of her problems. Bane was still out there, and as soon as he found another lightsaber, he'd come looking for her. Unless she found him first. The problem was Xana had no idea where to begin her search. Chapter 24. The Stone Prison's escape shuttle was small in size and lacked the luxuries of the princess's personal ship, but it had been fitted with a Class 5 hyperdrive and was well provisioned for interstellar travel. Theoretically, if there was ever a need to activate the dungeon's self-destruct sequence, there was also a strong possibility that key members of the royal family or their staff might be forced to flee Doan. In Sarah's case, this was actually true. She could only imagine the political fallout she had caused. The king's father had decommissioned the stone prison. Officially, it was still inactive. Its destruction would lead to a host of questions as to what exactly was going on in the complex beneath the royal family's estate. Any investigations would turn up nothing, of course. The demolition charges had been carefully engineered to inflict maximum structural damage. Any proposed recovery operation would prove too expensive and impractical. Whatever secrets the stone prison held would be buried forever. That wouldn't stop the rumors and speculation, though. The miners already mistrusted the nobility. Discovering the infamous dungeons had been reopened, even temporarily, would stir up bad blood and reopen old wounds. Sympathy and recruitment for the rebels would increase. Her own disappearance would add to the confusion. But in the long run, it would be better if she just disappeared. She had sworn loyalty to House Doan, and she had betrayed them, bringing trouble and misfortune down on Garen's kin. If the king and everyone else believed she was dead, sealed away forever beneath 10,000 tons of rock, it would be easier for them to clean up the mess she had left behind. Unable to return to her home on Doan, she had charted a course for the only other place in the galaxy she had ever known happiness. However, as she brought the shuttle in to land on the edge of her father's camp on Ambria, it wasn't joy she was feeling. In the space of only a few short months, it seemed as if she had lost everything. Alone, confused, and racked by guilt, she had come here in the hope of finding peace for herself and for her friend. It was early evening. The last light of day was just fading over the horizon as she unloaded Lucia's body. Laying her friend gently on the ground, she returned to the shuttle and found a small shovel tucked away in the supplies at the back. The sandy ground was soft, making her chore far easier than it would have been on most other worlds. Even so, it took her more than an hour of steady digging before the grave was complete. As best she could, she lowered Lucia's body into the hole she had dug, then picked up the shovel and buried her friend. The desert heat had faded quickly with the setting of the sun, and once her exertions were over, the chill made Sarah shiver. But the physical activity had been cathartic. The numbness that had clouded her thoughts and emotions had faded. A light breeze kicked up, and she shivered. Instead of going to the shuttle, however, she crossed the camp and sought shelter in her father's old abandoned shack. Inside, she huddled in a corner and closed her eyes. She could still feel her father's presence here. Even though he was gone, being in this place made it easy to call up memories. His face. His voice. She was able to